AI still sucks. Google Glass is making a comeback. Japanese train riders get handsy, and it's still a great time to be alive. All that and more on Android App Addicts. Hey, everybody, and welcome to Android App Addicts. This is the show where we talk about Android apps, Android hardware, and whatever else happens to cross our minds. This is episode 539 and brought to you this week by Canon St. Rose, the podcast, the Patreon supporter extraordinaire. Thank you, Canon, for your support. My name is Mark, occasionally your host. And with me, as always, because even when I'm not here, he's here, is the door-to-door geek, Steve McLaughlin. Hey, Door, how you doing?
Hey, Mark. Doing okay now. This has been a crazy week for storms and weather-related kind of things. We had a tornado hit 15, 20 miles from my house. Baltimore's not really known for tornadoes, so, you know, that's not nice. And then, you know, went without power for about a day, so I'm happy, you know. It came back on. The wife was worried about the food going bad in the fridge.
Well, that's a thing to worry about. Food is expensive.
Yeah. And we did just get from her sister like a chest freezer in the garage. So 2 weeks ago, we went and spent like $400 at the wholesale kind of store.
So I think this is my first show with you in a month. I think it's like exactly 4, maybe even 5 weeks since I've been with you. I apologize for my absence, and I thank you for your leniency. Just a lot of crazy stuff. It was end of year stuff, family stuff, and then work. I occasionally have to work long hours, long distances away, and that happened to be on 2 Thursdays in a row where I got home. Like I got home, I took my tie off, I went to bed. I got up the next morning, put my tie on, went back to work, did that for about 10 days straight. So good to be back with you. That's what I'm trying to say.
Always good to see you. And yeah, trust me, Mark, I know this is the worst time of year for a bunch of things. This in some ways is almost as bad as Thanksgiving to Christmas in terms of the amount of stuff to do.
It's May-cember. It's those 2 years are two months are rough. It's Christmas and end of school, in both cases, the end of the semester. But anyway, hopefully we'll be back together maybe 2 whole weeks in a row.
Ooh, that's nice. Well, and we have fresh, banging new hardware to use.
Indeed. Thank you so much, Stuart, for your extreme generosity in sending both Dor and myself new to us computers. Not new, but as Dor was saying, it's the best hardware he's got in his house. It's the second best in my house. And just, I got this email out of the blue. It says, from Stuart, says, hey, Dor thinks you need a new computer. What's your address? And I'll send it to you. Okay. And like overnighted it and everything. Amazing generosity, Stuart. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and that box is so good. I'm keeping that thing just in case I need it again.
Yeah. And anytime any other listener out there wants to send me free hardware, I'm totally up for that.
Well, I'll tell you, I hate to say it like this. I feel bad, dumb, ignorant, lazy, whatever, because it started because after one of the shows I did by myself, I just left the stream on while I was doing editing. I was sharing the screen, and I gently complained that I got to wait for this process to end. This takes, you know, 3 minutes because, you know, 7-year-old hardware kind of thing. And I said, you know, and I said offhandedly something like, well, you know, if I had an i7, I'm sure this would go quicker. And he said, oh, I got an i7. You want an i7? I'm thinking, yeah, sure. Okay. And then, you know, get it, boot it. Boot's good. Boot's fast. I think it's hysterical now that I launched my Kupfer, which is like the Mac Quicksilver application. Imagine in the Windows world, if you could hit the start menu, type Firefox, hit comma, hit Outlook, hit comma, type another tool, hit comma, and then just hit enter and have them all launch at the same time. That's what Kupfer can do for me. And I find it hysterical. On my old computer, I would launch Google Chrome, Thunderbird, Quazzle, Discord, Audacity, and it would take like 2.5 minutes. On this computer, I do that and it's done in like 3 seconds. It's sick. I've never had a computer like this.
Good stuff.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
So even though I wasn't on the show, you did read an email that I sent to you from the show. So I have some follow-up on that. I was As I told Dora, I had this old Nexus S, not the Nexus One, but the follow up to the Nexus One made by Samsung. What is that? 2011, 12 vintage, somewhere around there.
I believe it was 2011. Yeah. So
I've had this thing just sitting on my desk right here where I do the podcast for a long, long time, and didn't have any use for it. And I had a need for a metronome in my worship band at church. And you can buy metronomes these days, but they're just single purpose, set the thing and go. All the best metronomes are in software now, which makes sense. All the best tuners are in software. In the music world, everything is moving to the, largely iPad. But anyway, so I thought, I have several metronome apps on my regular phone, but I want to give this to the drummer at the church so that he has a standalone sort of thing that he can use at any point. And I have no use for this thing. I fired it up. It was fine. It was running great. It was just running Gingerbread. So I loaded up the Play Store. Oh, no. Gingerbread didn't have the Play Store. It had Android Market on it. Yeah. Oh. And then it was like, well, I'll just hop on over to Chrome. No, it didn't come with Chrome. It came with Browser. And Browser couldn't even load play.google.com. And so I thought, well, I'll just maybe download some APKs on it. Nope. It is just so outdated. It was completely useless. I couldn't put any software on it. I couldn't sideload anything because none of the APKs were valid for an OS that old. I would have had to go find some archive stuff from 2011. So I sent Dor an email saying, hey, this is right up your alley. This is the kind of weird thing that you excel at. Find me some apps that I can put on there or a way to ROM this thing. And he asked you, the audience, and I got no response. You're all useless. Every one of you. No.
Well, in Discord, they PM'd me. And I'm like, okay, I'm not going to remember this.
But what I did find, however, is that some enterprising young fellow named Dimitri had the same sort of experience I had and said, what could I do to bring a modern-ish operating system to the old Crespo? That was the code name hardware. And so he made a ROM for Lollipop, Marshmallow, Android 6.0. I loaded that sucker up and it worked like a charm. Tried to load the Google Play services on it to load the Play Store and crapped out. You ever had that thing where it says optimizing software 1 of 82, whatever, then it reboots and it's 2 of 2 and then it reboots? I let that thing run. I'm not kidding, Dora. I'm not exaggerating. I know that I'm prone to exaggeration, but this is not an exaggeration. I let it run for 2 full days, 48 plus hours, and it never optimized anything.
That is dedication.
I just plugged it in, threw it on the counter, and didn't think about it. I knew I was asking it to do something that the hardware just wasn't ever designed to do, and it gave up. So I flashed it back over again, back to stock Marshmallow, and then used ADB to sideload some stuff that I got off of APK Mirror and Bob's Your Uncle. It has everything on it I need right now, and it's probably even more secure because it can't go to the Play Store. It can't get to the internet. It can't be corrupted in any way. It just has the apps that I sideloaded on it. It doesn't have any of my contacts, any of that. So it's actually probably a better way to do it. So problem solved. On Sunday, I will be taking the new metronome extraordinaire up to the church. So thank you, Android App Addicts community, for nothing. Thanks for nothing. No, I appreciate your interest, and I thought you might be interested in the story. It was a fun little project for me.
Well, so did you find a application that would do metronome?
Oh, yeah, almost
playlist?
All of them do that. That part wasn't difficult.
Oh. See, because I kept looking at them, and none of them said. The only one I could find that definitely said playlist in the description was a iOS exclusive application.
No, you just sometimes have to dig a little deeper. The one that I personally use is simply called Tempo, just Tempo, and it does playlists. But there's one called Metronome Pro. There's another one that people like called Soundbrenner, and they all do that. And it's a common thing for bands on stage to have a playlist of clicks, right? So not only do you want this one at 180 beats, but you want this one at 180 beats 3/4 time with, a triplet grouping and that kind of thing. So that's why you have a playlist, because it's difficult to dial those settings in in between songs. But when you have a playlist set up, you just tap the next button, and in your in-ear monitors, the next tempo comes up, and then you just start playing, and everybody thinks, wow, these musicians are really good, when really they all have it right there in their ears.
Well, I know I would need help, so I don't blame you guys who actually do it to need help either.
So that's my story. That is pretty much all the input I will have for the rest of the show. So, Dor, you're on your own from here.
Well, you can have something to say about quite stuff. Possibly.
And I will read an email or two.
Gotcha. The first link I want to bring, it's just an example of how companies will promise us any and everything to get buzz, to get juice, to get flow, to get clicks, to get hype, to get whatever going. But in reality, the truth is often at least slightly different. There's a article here on Extreme Tech. It's been all over the place in the last couple of days. Google Duplex is the feature where they promised like you could talk to your Google Assistant device and it would automatically call and make appointments for you, schedule things for you, ask questions of human beings for you, and then come back with answers or, you know, worked or didn't work kind of thing. Well, it turns out, at least since Google Duplex has launched, over a quarter of all the phone calls placed have actually had either complete human-to-human interaction or they've had to have humans step in to the phone call to fix the conversation because it just went completely berserker, because to interact with humans is not easy at all.
I barely understand people. How do you expect a software to?
Well, I know, but people, you know, kept screaming and shouting, you know, computers are going to take over. This thing is going to call people. And, you know, it better tell people that it's AI and it's not a real person. And people were, I think, very generous way of saying overreacting. They were completely overreacting. And I believe most of those people were literally overacting just because they wanted clicks.
Well, that is the new economy.
It really is, I'll say. And that's just, I hate to say that's the way it is, but, you know, okay, another diversion. One of the things I did comment on 2 weeks ago was about 5G and health issues, okay? I'll first say there's no absolutes, period. Let's first start there. Is vitamin C good for you? Yes. Is vitamin C bad for you? Yes. There is no absolute. It's something good or bad for you. It's both, okay? Nothing is absolutely bad. What was your old saying, Mark? The poison is in the dose, or the toxin is in the dose, or something like that?
Poison is in the cure. Is that what you're thinking?
Well, there's something about the dose. Whatever. Okay. Thus, you can take vitamin C, and you're fine. You take too much vitamin C, you can die. You know what I mean? I'll just put it like this. In probability standards, okay, just looking at probability, the likelihood that 5G is going to be horrible for human beings and kill thousands and thousands and thousands of people is slim to none. So then we got to say to ourselves, okay, what if 1 out of 1 million people die from 5G? Is that too much to where we have to now do something? And then you, if you say no, well, is 10 out of a million too many? And then you just, so there's a sliding rule kind of thing, okay? And then I'll say to you, well, okay, you draw the number here. Why don't you stand on street corners and say we need to stop driving cars? Because more people are probably dying from cars than that. 5G is nothing more than radio telephony. That's all it is. It's nothing special. It's nothing fancy. It's nothing unknown. It's nothing that hasn't been used for decades in other industries is the real key. This is just modifying the exact same radio transmitters to transmit at a different frequency. That's all it is. It's like the difference between ultraviolet, infrared, sunlight, microwaves, radio. It's all the same. It's all just waves. It's just different frequencies of waves. It's not going to kill you, period. If it did, I don't think, you know, the people making it would put it in their own home country, and they are. So, you know, is it great for you? Probably not. Is it going to cure your cancer? Maybe if it's highly focused, it might. But it's not going to, you know, commit mass genocide like a lot of these clickbaiting people are insisting, is what I'll say.
All right. So let's talk about a little bit about the physics of radio, since you brought it up. Almost all things around us are that we perceive are in the form of waves. This voice that you're hearing right now is waves. It is It is waves. The air is being moved by the speaker that you're listening to, and that is transmitting across the air to your ear holes, and you're translating it there. Well, if I spoke fast enough, my speech would turn into light. The waves that I make, the frequency between one peak and another, that's what frequency is. If it's a really low tone, it starts, there's a long period, a long frequency between one peak and another. Think of a wave on the ocean, right? The space between the waves is the frequency. So if the sea is very choppy, there's very little space between waves, lots of peaks coming at you very quickly. When you break that down into sending data over waves, more waves is better, right? Ones and zeros. The wave, the peak of the wave is a one. The space between the waves is a zero. Computers do everything in ones and zeros. So the faster we can make the waves come, the more peaks we can have, the more close together we have those, the more data we can push. So you can transmit data via sound waves. In fact, the old modems did that. If you were like me and you had a TRS-80 color computer 2 as your first computer, you had a tape deck that you saved data with and played it back in. You hit the play button on your tape deck and you hit the load button on your computer, and then you went and had a sandwich while it played back the sound waves, right? So that's all digital transmission is. It's that same process, just sped up. 5G is just faster waves. That's all there is to it. And Dora, you talked about the difference between ionizing radiation and non-ionizing. Eventually, radiation gets up. If the waves get so fast, they can actually rip through your body at the subatomic level and ionize. Ionizing is when you knock an electron off, or you knock a proton off, which is very rare, primarily electrons. But you got to get a super high energy for that.
Right. Kind of like ultra UVA and UVB. Right.
And even that is super low intensity. So ultraviolet light coming from the sun, right, ionizing, it sunburns you. That's a radiation burn from ionizing radiation from the sun.
Right.
But it can only penetrate a few inches, millimeters into your skin. Right.
Right. And here's the thing. So when I say I could stick a 5G antenna up my butt for 20 years and in all probability have absolutely no sign of anything happening to my body whatsoever, because that's the likelihood. You know what I mean? We have to go with probability, right, with these kind of things, and the probability of it damaging anything is slim to none. The probability of this thing causing mass death is zero. I mean, literally, there are much better things in this world to worry about.
Yeah. And 5G. They did a lot of studies on cell phones. The cell phones have only been around 30 years in wide use, and people worried about the radiation from cell phones, putting an antenna up to your head. Lots of studies have been done about this, and basically what they found is that you're more likely to sustain damage from the cadmium in the battery than you are from the radio waves produced by the telephone. So, you know, chill out. There are waves high enough in intensity that can hurt you. For example, a microwave. You throw a hot dog in the microwave, you hit the button, that's just vibrations. But they're so high intensity that they can cook a hot dog. We will know long before we have to worry about that. If a new technology, I mean, we do actually send microwaves through the air all the time. There are microwave towers. You just don't want to fly in between them. And you're definitely not going to put one in your pocket. So chill out, people. It's fine. And vaccinate your children, by the way, while I'm talking to you, because you're the same people.
Well, yes. Yes. I'll say this. I listen to everything from Ancient Aliens to Carl Sagan Cosmos. Okay. That should be pretty clear to people out there. Everything. Everything. I listen to everything. I want to know what the smartest of the smartest people think and the craziest of the craziest people think, because the truth is somewhere in the middle, in my logic, because it's very easy. Studies have shown it's very easy to fool the smartest of the smartest people, and it's very easy to fool the dumbest of the dumbest people. Yeah, they're equally fallible to their own belief systems. I will encourage people. There is a series out there, Crash Course Navigating Digital Information. I will say it's on my Plex server. If you don't have access to it or you don't want to watch it on YouTube, don't hesitate. shoot me an email. I can give you a link and access to my Plex server. One of the things in navigating digital information is anytime you see anything on the internet, yes, it's hard work, people. You look at it and you say to yourself, what does this person have to benefit by me believing this or by me sharing this? Two, you then open up a new tab. This is called lateral searching. You open up a new tab and then you search and find what you consider to be experts. You never listen to a single sole source. Okay. This is 2019. You should never listen to a single sole source on anything. You should then look for multiple sources, especially with people don't have citations when they say something. You never believe them. A citation is, here's where I got the information from. Okay. Or else they're literally making it up out of thin air. Okay. Then you follow that, trace that back. And then what you come to find out is 99% of the people out there getting the most traffic are literally making stuff up or going by strictly hearsay. Okay. Watch this crash course and you'll understand better how to navigate the public sphere of computing. Okay. Everybody I know out there who has nothing to gain by 5G failing or 5G succeeding, who understands biology, physiology, radio waves, basic physics kind of thing, all of them say without a shadow of a doubt, there is no harm in this whatsoever. There cannot be any harm in this whatsoever. And I remember people saying, yes, your cell phone will cause cancer. Then they said, oh, Bluetooth will cause cancer. Oh, then they said, wait, if you have a hard wire going from the phone to your ear, it transmits it right into your head and then you'll die from cancer that way. None of those people have been even remotely right. And yet they now change and say 5G is going to kill you. And people believe that. I am literally amazed at, you know, about what people will just blatantly believe is what I'll say. There's much more taxing things to worry about in this day and age than, you know, is 5G going to kill people?
I think, you know,
I'm sorry.
Agent Smith said it right when he said that humans need a certain amount of misery to be happy.
Well, and we have to have an enemy. That's one of the things I can say without a shadow of a doubt. We need enemies right in front of us, or we will create them out of thin air. And, you know, there always has to be some tragedy coming to kill us, whether it is the world's going to end in, you know, the end of the year or some specific time frame. And none of those have ever came to fruition. So I think we're, you know, we should be okay. Okay. Had to get the link. Okay. Got the link. Sorry. Okay. Now with that said about all the 5G stuff, I have good news for you people. Competition is on the horizon. Okay. Especially if Mark didn't accidentally. Okay. Good. We now have, okay, the only, here's the whole thing. Is Huawei going to do something that China says? Yes, absolutely. Is Samsung going to do something that South Korea says? Yes, exactly. Is Facebook going to do something that the United States government says? Yes, exactly. Every company is beholden to whatever country they belong in or that they're in. That's just the fact of life. Exactly. They have to, period. We're going to have some competition because right now, Samsung Exynos processors, Qualcomm processors, Snapdragon processors are becoming almost monopolistic in the amount of devices that they're in versus other types of processors. MediaTek, for a great many years, was a subpar-ish processor. It didn't get a lot of love. It didn't get a lot of publicity. It was on a lot of like second-tier devices is the way that I'll put it. But they've made great strides in progress in the last year or two. Both Xiaomi devices and Huawei devices, more than a couple of them, come with MediaTek processors in it, and they've came a long way, them and Kirin processors. MediaTek unveiled a 7-nanometer Cortex A77 chip with a brand new graphics chip in it as well, with baked into the chip 5G modem capabilities. This is right now by far the like top of the line-ish ARM infrastructure you can get anywhere, period. Okay. And they just announced the chip. So expect the competition in the higher end devices to completely heat up. Here in the next 18 months, 20 months, we're going to see some phenomenal powered devices kind of like coming out of nowhere. It ain't going to be HTC. It ain't going to be LG. Probably ain't going to be Samsung because Samsung ain't going to use MediaTek because they're Samsung. They're going to use Exynos. Expect it to be other people putting these processors in their phones. And the more phones we see with this processor in it, the cheaper it will become, thus hopefully creating true competition again in the architecture processor space for modems and processors.
I'm just geeking out on the fact that you glossed over it, and there's no reason you wouldn't, because this is 2019, but the picture that you put there, MediaTek 5G SoC, that SoC system on a chip, that's an entire yep. computer system on a chip, probably about the size of a postage stamp, maybe smaller. I'm still blown away by the time in which I live. Just quick side note, never lose your wonder, people. Geeks tend to have a problem with losing their wonder. They know enough about stuff that they forget to be wowed by it. Just take a moment to be wowed. This chip is cheap and fast and amazing, and it's a commodity. And just be wowed by that for a moment.
Yeah. Did you see the SpaceX internet connectivity satellites being distributed?
I did not.
Oh, Mark, this is the thing like dreams are made of, man. A guy in Australia, this was, I don't want to say an hour after the launch, it was a time after the launch, was able to look up at the night sky with his telescope and record a chain of 66 lights basically going across the sky. And it was all of the SpaceX internet telephony. I think, I can't remember what it's called, but they're basically trying to develop a new protocol, a planetary protocol, because with IP won't work over light years of distance because of the delay that is involved. So and it was just, it was gorgeous. It was literally like science fiction come to real life. Okay. That's the kind of stuff that literally makes me giddy as a little frigging child. Oh, fantastic stuff. I love that stuff. And yes, I've been in on the system of on a chip thing, you know, with the Raspberry Pi and stuff forever. So to me, this is just another step to where until computing is truly ubiquitous with, here's me, the two main goals with computing in the future, smaller, AKA less resources needed to create such a device, and hopefully less pollutants and less mining and less whatever, AKA cheaper, smaller, but also more power sensitive. So they need even less power to perform greater result sets. And that's what's happened. I mean, if you remember back in the day, the mainframe computers that took up entire floors of buildings, the amount of power they took up was insane. And the amount of processing you got out of it in comparison was unbelievably small. Where today, we're able to get a system on a chip the size of your thumb that can literally perform the entire world's computations from just, you know, 30 years ago in like a second.
It's a great time to be alive.
It is really good. This was an app/news link that I saw that I just had to bring because I love the ingenuity, I'll say, of Japanese people. When they know that tech can solve a problem, they take it all the way. Okay. Apparently on Japan, they've had issues with people being very forward on trains to the opposite sex. So much of an issue that they literally designated entire cars in the past where the only females can get on this car, period. If a man gets on this car, you're going to jail. Okay. That's how bad it was. Because we've all seen the stereotypical Japanese train, you know, people being pushed on because they're so packed with people. Well, now, basically, there's an app out on the Japanese market that will yell and make an extremely loud noise yell if your phone thinks that you're being touched inappropriately. Japan, you know, that's Japan for you.
So does the phone know or do you have to tell it? That's what I don't get.
What it looks like is especially if the phone is on your person, if the screen is facing out, it can tell if there are extra touching going on. But I do believe there is a panic button, yes.
Extra touching going on. Show title, by the way, if anybody's writing these things down.
See, this is why I have to do shows with other people. I can never think of those titles, ever.
Let me read an email. We've got several of those while you move for the next thing, shall we? Some of these are old. You may have already done them. Stop me if you've heard this one before. The 10-second follow-up. Yeah, I heard you do this one, so I'm going to skip over that one and go back a week. See, I thought I was ready, and then I actually read the thing, and then I was...
Well, and we have to thank Chuck Green, our newest Patreon, old good friend, old friend, yes. The Rhino. Thank you and very much. And
your generosity, of course. So okay, here we go. This is from Robot 404. Gotta add what I wanted to say from last week's show. There was plenty going on at Google I.O., but I'm not surprised you found it boring. It's meant for devs, not normal people. One of the cool things they showed was getting an assistant, getting the assistant on device and shrinking the file size from 100 gigs on their cloud service to just over 0.5 gigs on the device. There goes that annoying latency, hopefully. And something cool that they released was they released a program to teach the assistant to understand people that don't talk normally, like stroke victims or those with speech impediments. That is pretty cool. Google is all about deep AI. And, you know, you may not know this, general listening audience, but Google was very upfront about the fact that the only reason Google Voice exists was to develop training models for speech recognition. And what better way to do that than to have thousands, millions of people making phone calls every day? So they have lots of normal things. I like the idea of being able to train it. And the training has just gotten a lot better. They can do that now. So thanks, Rob, for your geeking out there about some developer stuff.
Yeah, and I'll say he was right. And I admitted to him, at least privately, part of the reason I did that and called the show that was literally just for trolling sake. Once, if you haven't noticed yet, people, once every 6 to 8 episodes, I like to title the episode something that should get random passersby to take notice, aka it might fulfill some people's search terms. Some people call that being clickbaity. I call it just testing the waters, because I only do it once every couple episodes, at most every 8 episodes. And he is right. I did hear about the shrinking of code. I don't care. I don't care anything about the shrinking of code. Okay, that is what is supposed to happen. When code matures, you're supposed to figure out how to optimize it, whether it be just getting rid of it or figuring out what's unnecessary or just shrinking the number of lines needed to do the same thing. And I say that because that's all I've been doing for 23 years as a government employee. I've taken 200,000 lines of code and shrunk it down to 3 lines of code. That's what I've done in COBOL. I hate COBOL, but that's the kind of stuff I've had to do. But understanding the speech disfluency that happened in people is not easy. If they can do that, that's going to be pretty game-changing, because right now there's over 3 billion people in the U.S.
No, 300 million
people in the U.S. Almost 100 million of them have some kind of speech disfluency. Some of them are not bad, okay? But some of them are very severe. So that's, I can't deny.
And that's something. And that's something that takes a little training even for humans to do, right? Anybody who's ever had a toddler knows that eventually you learn to speak their language before they learn to speak your language. But it takes some training. You know, that's not AI. That's RI. It's real intelligence that goes on there. My granddad had a stroke, and it took the whole family a while to learn his way of speaking. And to now think that a 0.5 megabyte piece of software can do what I could do, that's both impressive and frightening.
Yeah, and I'll say to then throw back at least a month mark, my kid's making fun of me saying please to my car when I ask it to do something. I did do it basically an A-B test. You know what I mean? I did an A-B-C test. So every time I carpool with my wife every day, I take the car 4 out of 5 days. When I'm pulling up to pick her up, I literally say, okay, Schmoogle, send text message to blah, 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 blah. Tell her I am out front whenever you are ready. It then says, here's your text message to blah, blah, blah. I'm out front whenever you are ready. Do you want to send it? Okay. I did 3 different things. I said, yes, please. I said, yes. And I changed that with send it. So I tried just saying yes, just saying send it. And then I also tried saying, I would like you to send it. Every single time, the shorter of the words would fail insane number of times. If I just said yes or just said send it, 2/3 of the time it would fail. But anytime I said anything longer, it was 90+% success rate. So I'm now convinced just saying more helps it immensely. Kind of like longer passwords, just a little bit of a longer password helps with security insanely amount. Saying what you want in a couple more words to your Google Assistant, to your Amazon Alexa, to your Cortana, to your Siri will help
Well, that makes sense. Maybe not from the language understanding part, but from the giving it a signal to noise sample, right? There's lots of noise going around in your car all the time, whether your puny human meat brain may have tuned it out, you know, recognize the sound of the air conditioning, the sound of the traffic around you, but the AI brain in that computer does. And if you give it a better sample of what it's supposed to be listening to, it will absolutely be better able to understand that it was you talking and not the birds out your window.
Right. Yeah. And so now I'm like thoroughly convinced every time I say something to it and it wants confirmation, I literally say at least 3 or 4 words and I've had like 98%+ success rate. This next one I saw, and there's actually 3 links here, Mark, and I'm going to put in to me the most important one first, which is the actual YouTube video. Google for a while, and I'm purposely talking so you can at least see some of the video. Google has said for a while that we are going to have 2 operating systems. We are going to have Chrome and we're going to have Android. Chrome is our big screen, laptop-like, desktop-like computing experience. And Android is our smaller screen, touch-based, touch-focused, touch-emphasized interface. Well, Android Q is literally like right around the corner. And this was a Android Q desktop preview video released where basically you can take, back in the day we had MHL, we had these other micro HDMI standards. Well, with Type-C, you'll be able to connect it directly to like a computer or a monitor, use the monitor as like a second screen for your Android device, connect via Bluetooth to your phone, and literally have much, much, much more of a desktop-like experience from your Android phone. This almost is fulfilling the dream of you have your computer in your pocket, you go to work, you plug it up to a dock, put it to a big screen, use a keyboard, use a mouse, take it off, come home, stick it in another dock, so you have a mobile computing experience all being powered from your pocket.
Yeah, I've been bitten by this before. This was the promise of Honeycomb. This is exactly what Android Honeycomb was supposed to be.
I know, and we can keep going back, Mark, that this was the Motorola Atrix, which was like 3 years before that. I mean, we've had this promise a great number of times, and the Remix Ultra Jide tablet I had was, to me, the best by far desktop, laptop, full screen, keyboard type experience I saw on Android. And I will say, when you watch the video of this in action, it does look nice. But it's the kind of thing, if you don't immediately gravitate towards it being a functional workflow, this is going to have a really hard time succeeding. But to me, this is almost in like direct contradiction with Chrome OS, because it to me, it's like impeding in on that space. And do they really want to impede on their other products? You know what I mean? This is confusing to me.
Yeah, I don't get it either. The interface, I'm assuming you're not going to be able to just plug this into a monitor, right? So you essentially have to buy a computer to use your phone as a computer.
Well, they did have some standalone monitors at CES back in January. And that's the impression I'm getting, is they're looking at the same type of technology there.
But where you'll so be it's able a smart monitor or just, you know, a dumb computer. It's a Chromebook. You have to buy a Chromebook so that you can hook your phone up to it and use your phone like a Chromebook.
Or I will say, the idea of the dock is basically dead. I don't know if you know this, Mark. In the laptop world, the classic dock is dead. It's gone. You almost can't get them anymore. Instead, what you get is more akin to a hub, where you plug via USB-C up to the hub, and then in the hub, you can have video out and other peripherals come out of that, including video. So to me, there's 2 ways this can happen. Is A, you plug it up to like a laptop and then have the OS interpret it and put it on that screen, or you have one of those, like I said, smart monitors or hubs with video out on it. Thus, you're going to have to make some kind of financial investment. Now, if you're already paying $1,000 for a phone, you might be perfectly fine with spending another $200 on a hub. But I don't think a lot of people would. I mean, if I could repurpose an old laptop to do it, maybe, but I don't, and I'm a nerd and I don't see myself really going crazy for this.
Well, you're also a world-renowned tightwad like myself, so we may not be the the prime demographic for this sort of thing. But it's, I'm glad that Google is experimenting. History has shown that when Google experiments, we win.
Right. And history shown that when you don't experiment and you're like IBM, nobody buys your stuff anymore. So yeah, I'm perfectly good with that. I like companies spending money on research and dev.
So while you're doing that, let me read another email. I'm trying to go back through some of the more recent ones. Here's something I often say on my other show, on the Geek Rant podcast that I do, that I give complainers sort of front row seats. I like all feedback, good and bad. So I'm going to bring a little about that here to AA. I'm going to choose to read this overtly negative email. Just because, you know, the community needs to know that this sort of stuff is out there. A fellow by the name of Vineet said, AAA that aired on May 13th was a complete snorefest. You read it right. In fact, this episode was a bigger bore than the Google I.O. 2019. It looks like you've run out of good apps to showcase. Whatever happened to the crappy app section? In fact, it's been this way for some episodes now. And this is the first time I've logged off in between your episodes in 2 years. I think it will be great to have all three of you back again, and I will not have to consider completely logging off from your podcast. So clearly, Vineet is not up on the current news because there's not three of us anymore. But he found that show was something he couldn't listen to. And okay. Your voice has been heard, Vineet. Don't ever let it be said that we ignore negative feedback.
Yeah, and I'll say I never really brought crap apps. I mean, I'll give you access to the spreadsheet. You can view it. Maybe in 530 episodes, I brought two crap apps. I never really brought crap apps. I did find out doing podcasts by myself, I can never make jokes because I can never make myself laugh, kind of thing. So I don't try to be funny, I guess, is what I'm saying. So I don't blame anybody for not liking when I do a show by myself, which is why the first thing I try to do when I start a show by myself is to let everyone know this is a show by myself. You know what I mean? So if you're looking for banter, if you're looking for back and forth, then that's not the episode for you. And my logic is I would always much rather put out something that a minority or majority of listeners would call a snorefest with just me without crap apps than not putting anything out at all. So, the beautiful thing about podcast is you don't like it, you can just hit delete or hit next on your player and you don't have to worry about it. Or you can click unsubscribe and that's okay because, you know, we don't have, you know, 50 people in the back producing and editing and pushing for content and pushing for advertisers and everything else. So we'll be fine.
Yeah. And I always say, if you don't like it, don't keep listening. I mean, I don't say that to be flippant, but time is precious. Don't waste it on something you don't like. And I'm sorry if we're not producing the kind of content that you like, but if that's true, go find pod content you do like.
Well, and if you don't like what we like, make your own. And if you do, yeah, send me a link. I'll there listen. You go. Yeah, that's what I do. Yeah, now I'm up to like 150 again, podcast mark. I had to bring this only because it's been like, this is one of the Google things that's literally went completely back and forth in the last couple of years. Where once again, Google announced a new $999 Google Glass augmented reality headset. The original price, I want to say, was $1,400 or $1,500. So it's came down in price a touch. It is unbelievably more sleeker designed, is what I'll say. And I'll say they again made it like really clear in the launching of this. This is for enterprise businesses only, where there's no doubt having this implemented correctly can not only help with stuff like safety, but can help with efficiency and training like insanely.
I would love to be able to sit around a conference room and see the slide deck in virtual view, you know, in my glasses, instead of trying to look at a bad screen like that, or, you know, for teleconferencing purposes. I'd love to be able to look at somebody and have their latest email or calendar contacts or whatever pop up based on facial recognition. These are the kind of things that could be cool, but in a very narrow sort of thing. And one of the things I don't think Google has figured out yet is a whole bunch of the population doesn't wear glasses. And so you got to figure out a way for people who don't wear glasses to do this, because they're not going to strap on a pair of, well, I don't know, the millennials might. Millennials like to wear glasses. they might do it just because of this. But anyway, it's a thing. Once again, I'm glad Google's experimenting, because when they experiment, the world wins at large. But I think this is just going to be another Google, what was the round video thing? I don't remember what it was. Yeah.
View, I think.
It's gonna be another one of those. Another piece of just useless tech.
Well, that was useless from day one. So yeah, this, honestly, I can see hypothetically working in a loud factory, having this, having it on, even in safety glasses form, which they do say they have them also as like safety goggles, to where if there's like an alert that I can't hear because I'm working in a huge factory kind of thing, to have that like instantaneously pop up right there. I knew as a business owner, liability kind of thing. I love
you.
The idea
you just made me think of something I hadn't considered before, but you integrate this into some safety goggles in a manufacturing plant, and I see the instructions, the processes of the steps I'm supposed to be doing, or maybe even an overlay that shows me the size of the piece and tells me where to put it. All right, now I'm with you.
Oh yeah. Yeah. They had a demo where they were showing, training people on fabrication, like literally like in the corner, you see what you're supposed to be doing next. So yes, it was like training, not assembly line workers, but something like that. Yeah. But you had it right. Niche. It's very niche. This is not something you are going to come across in your daily routine, but it will, I think, serve a definite purpose. And as industries figure it out that it can be used, the price will then keep coming down. It will only get more popular. The other place they said this is actually being used is in surgeries. So, you know, you're knocked out. How would you know? But so apparently there are more than a couple places in the U.S. where every surgeon has a pair of these on at the same time, viewing what the next step is, what they have to do next. You know, to me, this is the kind of perfect use case where I don't need to know about it happening, but I like the fact that it's like slowly propagating into actual
okay, places Google, of work. How do I perform an appendectomy?
Any day now. Yeah. And just one more quick health related thing, which I think is really cool. You can tell I haven't done a show for like a Android show for like 2 weeks. This is National Science Foundation. This is one of the websites I actually have, like, my news reader, my, you know, from the year 2000 RSS news reader, scraping, for good information. And this one I found out was really cool. It's basically a attachment you can put on a normal phone. You load this app and you can basically shove the phone right in the very beginning part of the ear, and it can diagnose ear infections. Now, of course, a doctor can literally just look in there and tell if he has ear infection. There's a doctor. But this is so triage stuff can be done much more competently, is the way that I'll put it. I love the idea of using off-the-shelf hardware to help the health professionals come to a more quicker, more absolute, more confident diagnosis before getting to the
now,
actual doctor.
This thing also has an app that will signal my pediatrician and have them call in a prescription for antibiotics without me having to go pay my $20 copay. I'm in on that.
I'll tell you right now, I don't know nothing. Mike, DeMarc, this kind of stuff is literally around the corner. We already have a couple health places in the U.S. where they basically only do digital appointments, literally like FaceTime, okay? It's going to be, but the advantage is that the doctor is going to be able to spend more time talking to you. I don't know about you. You go to the doctor, you're lucky if you get 15 minutes. And that's because they got to spend so much time preparing and, you know, going back and forth kind of thing, where when it's all digital, they can literally just sit there and as they're talking to you, be reviewing everything. And the idea of a digital appointment is not far off, to where you'll go into a clinic type atmosphere with assistance with this kind of technology. And then they'll tell you, go ahead and sit in front of that screen and the doctor will be with you shortly. And in actuality, the doctor's in Chicago or some other city. It is coming. It's just a question of how long.
Let me read another email. This one comes from Julian. who says, first off, please enter me for the drawing. Says, just thought I'd put fingers to keyboard and comment on a couple of matters. Firstly, Google's decision to end its Play Music service is disappointing. I've only been a subscriber for a while, but it's proven a hit with the family and myself. I know the intention is for YouTube Music to take over, and I guess it'll end up being just as good eventually, but artists have to upload their music again, and who knows what the reaction is going to be, especially if the licensing arrangements are different. Here's hoping for it's a fine drop-in replacement. I want to stop right there. I didn't know about this. I use Google Play Music almost every day. I don't use the Spotify-like version where it plays stuff because it's always bad. I have my own music uploaded, which was a thing that you were able to do a long time ago. And I have enjoyed the ability to stream my music, my personal library, from anywhere. And I will be very sad if that feature goes away.
Yeah, I'll be shocked. I'll say this. I'll be shocked if it goes away. But I do know it does seem like they want people to use YouTube Music more and more and more and more and more. And I understand why. YouTube, number two search engine in the world. Stadia is really a YouTube thing. All the kids these days can't get off the YouTube. So
it's the next great frontier for them. All right, continuing with the email. Yeah. Also, the unfortunate situation with Huawei is one, in my opinion, which boils down to the protectionism on the part of the U.S. government. The firm was just too darn successful. I've been pondering what the mobile phone manufacturer could do now, since trade with Europe might also halt if Google revokes the use of its services to the OEM. I doubted it ever happened, but wouldn't it be great if the firm decided to take an open source route by producing devices that could be proven to not track users unnecessarily? Highly unlikely, but all this talk on Huawei phones sending data to China might just encourage some discussion in the company's boardroom. Lastly, thanks for all the time and effort you put into the Podnuts Network. Honestly, words can't express the respect I have for you and the others involved. So thank you, Julian, for your fine message. Personally, I think the Huawei thing is just going to blow over and nobody's going to care in about 8 months.
Yeah, I think it's, and the way I try to think of it is, it's two different ways I think of it. One, if you tell somebody to go underwater, take a picture of them, and then send the picture around and say, this person is drowning, we have to do something right now, you're just seeing one stitch in time. Nothing politically is lightning fast. I think all of the hoopla is literally just hoopla. It's just antagonism back and forth. I'm right, no, I'm right, back and forth. And yes, they did become too successful too fast. Were they completely honest the way that they did everything? No. Is any company completely honest the way they do things? No. I don't know of a single company that is pure in their success. They all have to lie, cheat, and steal in some regards to become successful. You know, that in 2019, that's all I see. I think it is nothing more than just pushing in flack, you know, just trying to just change the market, and it's all that's going to hurt is all consumers. It's all just political mumbo jumbo. And yes, in like 6 to 8 months, there's no doubt it will blow over. The question is, you know, if you push a bird out of the nest and force them to do something, one of two things is going to happen. You know, the bird can fall and die, or the bird can take off and you'll never see it again. Part of me believes doing this could be one of the worst things that it could cause the absolute opposite intent of what everyone thinks it could happen. Huawei is and has been working on their own operating system, in air quotes. There's multiple reports that they've been working on their own Play Store. They've been working with Aptoid. They've been working with these other things that we've heard of in the past to offer their own Play Store. So there is a small chance. Okay, here's the thing. They don't have to sell to Europe or the US at all. And they'll still have over half their sales, because that's where they sell all their stuff, in China. And still be successful. So don't be shocked if they do their own operating system, they do their own Play Store, and they do only become more successful as time goes on. That's a possibility. And then Google will suffer. The US will suffer. Not good is what I'll say. Not good at all.
So the population of the planet is approximately 6.5-7 billion, somewhere around there. 300 million in the U.S., about 700 million in Europe. So that's a billion people. They've got 6 billion other people to sell to. They'll do just fine.
Yeah, they're not going to slow down. Why would they slow down? I mean, they're getting everything they want out of this. Attention. they're just driving the name Huawei as being somebody competent into everyone's brains. You know, yes, the guy's daughter is right now in jail in Canada, but I can only say one thing to that. It's either my way or the Huawei. Oh.
I sure don't want to be judged on the behavior of my children.
Yeah. Well, yeah. No comment. No comment whatsoever, Mark. But yeah, Lenovo is going to keep being successful. Xiaomi is going to keep being successful. Oppo is going to keep being successful. Samsung is going to keep being successful. And Huawei is going to keep being successful, no matter what any single government tries to do to them. And honestly, I hate to say it like this. Part of me believes the free market system, the globalization, which some people think is a really dirty, crooked word, the globalization almost reinforces the fact that we have to work together because we rely on each other more and more and more. The old economist saying, and sorry for the snort fest, is you take a pencil. At minimum, the creation of that pencil requires 10 unique companies to come together, because the person putting that pencil on the shelf is not chopping down trees. They are not mining for graphite. They are not mining for the metal. They are not making the paint. They are not chopping down the rubber trees. Every product relies on a myriad of companies to get anything done. It ain't just Huawei. You know, every company's like that.
Good point.
That's just, you know, a quick tangent. And thank you for that email, Julian, and everybody for the emails, even if they're negative. I don't care. Still good to hear from you. I got to throw this one out because I know we're already long. Oldie but a goodie. This is an app I brought 3+ years ago. I don't even know. I cannot even begin to tell you when I brought this app, but it's still as relevant today as ever, and maybe a little bit more relevant because of Stardew Valley, but I'm not going there. This application lets you load the app. It will run in the background, load anything. It doesn't have to be a game, but it works best with games, is what I'll say. And if there's on-screen controls or on-screen buttons or on-screen interactions you can do, you can then map the controls to a Bluetooth gamepad input. So hypothetically, you have your phone, you can either plug or a Chromebook, you can plug up or Bluetooth connect a gamepad, you can then load this app, TinCore Key Mapper, and then you can basically map where those buttons, physical buttons, will touch on the physical screen, thus allowing you to play a lot of games with touch controls, even if the game was not meant to use a keyboard or a gamepad kind of thing. I've had nothing but crazy success with this app, is what I'll say. Fun, helps with gaming in general, especially, I'll say, if you have a Chromebook with Android apps on it, you get a decent gamepad, plug it up via USB right to the side of the Chromebook, and you got yourself a basically a good gaming machine.
Awesome.
And I know, Mark, this is the kind of thing that, yeah, you know.
Yeah. I'm just going to, you know, speak for Eric and say, I'm not a gamer. I do want to really quickly give a shout out. We mentioned Chuck earlier. I also want to mention our new Patreon, Phil, who in the last couple of weeks or so has stepped up and said that he would be a Patreon supporter. Thank you, Phil, for that. I'm not sure if you've already called him out, but I want to do that again. Every little bit helps in terms of, you know, running the show and that sort of thing, but really it's the standing up, the being counted, the showing support in a tangible way that has an emotional impact far beyond just the material one. So thanks for that.
Absolutely. I'm going to bring just one more app, and I'm really bringing this app just because I want to see if we get more takedown notices. Look, I'm a Nintendo fanboy from 1986, I believe, is when the NES came out. And I love the fact that this URL is not even accessible to anybody except for me, because I've been playing Super Mario Kart Tour closed beta test version. I am terrified this is going to be a microtransaction hell, where they're just going to try to make billions of dollars off of Mario Kart. I'll just put it like this. It was easy for me to get into the beta because I don't have a Samsung Galaxy S9. I got a Huawei P20 Lite. I know I put my name on that list. They're going to put me in the beta. because they want the as broad range of hardware as possible. And how many Huawei P20 Lites, thank you, Kevin McLaughlin, are going to be on that list? Granted, not many. So I had a much higher probability of being picked, so I did it. Kids love the game. My oldest loved it, played it great, kept getting first place. My youngest loved it, kept getting third place because, you know, he's younger. But it is the kind of system, Mark, it looks like if you don't do good enough at a race, you'll lose hearts, and then you got to wait for your hearts to replenish to play another race. There's like five different types of payment methods in the game. You can have coins, you can have grand stars, you can have emeralds, you can have hearts as a type of monetary thing, and then there's at least one more where there's like when you see that types of that number of things that you can use to buy things in the game, you know it's going to be a microtransaction hell. But I'll say this, it's fun. It is damn fun. And it's in portrait mode, so you can play it while you're in a meeting and nobody will know you're playing a game.
Surreptitious game playing for the win. Yeah, so we are an hour plus here already. So let's bring out your premium product here and wrap this thing up in style.
Okay. This one I'm going to bring is actually... It is another game, and the reason I found the game was because it was on the Switch. It's 99 cents to buy on the Play Store, where it's, I think, $8 on the Switch. And it is a ultra-simplistic game called Mini Metro by Dinosaur Polo Club. Fantastic company name. Dinosaur Polo Club. E for everyone, 19,000-plus reviews. It might have... I did search the spreadsheet. I couldn't find this. 99 cents to buy, no in-app ads, no in-app purchases, 4.8 average reviews, 500,000 plus installs, current version 2.3.1, updated November 21st, 2018, 82 megs in size, permissions are nothing fancy, photos, media, files, storage, play license check, vibration, network access, every app needs that. This is a ultra simplistic yet addictive game of, at a high level, managing metro stations and metro lines, even though it doesn't look like metro lines. It looks like artistic squares and circles and lines and arrows. It's basically like brain puzzles, the way you can figure it out. And there is no perfect answer. It's always the way you feel like solving the answer is the answer. I'd say lots of fun, simple fun, ultra colorful, clean looking. I just had fun playing.
Yeah, see, this looks like the kind of game that could be my BB tan. I could get sucked into the vortex with this one. So I'm going to choose not to install it because you might never see me again if I do.
Well, but I'm sure you have some Google Play opinions rewards. Just I do, to be spent
and I'm not going to use them because I recognize my own addictive behavior and I'm going to walk away from there.
I understand, absolutely. Okay, then an actual semi-productive announcement then. This is a update from Mozilla. Mozilla has been doing a lot of things here in the last couple months. And the reason I say Mozilla is this is based off of Firefox browser. Okay, Firefox browser just went through some major shifts, major changes, major updates. Supposedly will auto quiet tabs on the desktop, do all kinds of functionality like that. The same optimizations have came down to the mobile platform. They've also launched their own send file solution. They've also have their own encryption, password encryption tool that they're releasing kind of soon. Mozilla is making lots of headway here in the last like couple months, and the Tor browser is a direct beneficiary of their work. I don't completely trust Tor. I've said it in the past. It was made by the Navy, the federal government. Go look it up. Don't believe me. They were the first people who actually put the code to the computer and wrote Tor. Exit nodes, I feel like, are nothing more than targets for people to watch. So I don't use no Tor. But if you require anonymity, yes, that word, then you need yourself some Tor browser. Don't accept imitations. Don't accept other applications that say they can do it. Download Tor and run it if you need at least some amount of it. And the incorrect word is privacy. It's not privacy because everything after the exit node is completely private kind of thing. Just like any other traffic. It's not a VPN tunnel, but it helps with anonymity. Thank you. That. Yes. I knew you were going to help me out.
Yeah, being anonymous is just as good as being private in many, many ways. Steve Gibson would probably argue with me on that.
Well, here's the thing. One of the biggest improvements in the latest version of Tor was it helps obfuscate fingerprinting. I know you know what fingerprinting is. It gives people other metrics in order to identify you without you wanting to be identified. Fingerprinting is a way that they can say, how many fonts do you have installed on your computer or phone? What is your resolution? What, you know, all this side information that help them build a profile, on you. Tor will help also disguise your fingerprinting things by basically injecting fake information into the stream. So yes, it can help with privacy. And I don't want to ever argue with Steve Gibson.
A losing game.
Yeah. I mean, you can't come out the other end looking smart.
All right. Anything else for us? I think we've got some other emails, but I think I will save those for later just for the sake of time. Anything else you just have to talk about?
I'll just say I literally had at least like 7 or 8 more links in the show. That's the problem with doing the good thing about doing this show. I believe, like Johnny Carson, I bring more stuff to each episode in my queue than I could ever bring to any one episode. So I try to only bring the best of the stuff to the show. If you want to see all those links that I ever have, I post them to Patreon to the $5 tier. And Sunday night, I then let that go in the free and clear. So even if you're not a Patreon member, you can go patreon.com/androidappaddicts. And Sunday night, when the show comes out public, you can see all the links that I had in my queue, all the ones I didn't bring this week, all the things that could be interesting to somebody, but you know, for one reason or another, they didn't make the cut. And Sunday night, you'll be able to see the video and all the stuff right there on Patreon, or you become a Patreon member and get everything that night, Thursday night.
Early access for Patreon subscribers. And when he says $5, he means $5 a month. Dor has his Patreon set up on a monthly payout, not a per episode. So $5 is $5 a month, $1.25 a show, except when we don't do 4 shows a month. But yeah.
Right. And that's the benefit to it. We could do 12 episodes a month. You're not going to pay anything more.
There you go. If you haven't checked out Patreon in a while, you should. It's got some really cool stuff in there. Some ways to manage your own spending, you know, by setting limits per month limits or per, what's the word they use? Creator limits. So, it's not the best, it's not the perfect platform, but I think it's the best platform currently available.
Right. I agree. I mean, perfection is unobtainable. I do believe right now it's the best we got.
And that's Patreon, patreon.com/androidappaddicts, all spelled out, Android App Addicts. Go check it out. We'll appreciate it if you do. We appreciate you anyway, but a lot of you are being appreciated anonymously and privately. You have both privacy and anonymity, because we don't know who you are. I'd like to know who you are. I'll still appreciate your privacy, but I'd like to know who you are. And the best way to do that is patreon.com/androidappaddicts.
Yep. And don't forget, if you want to watch us live Thursday night, 9 p.m. New York time, you can either follow us on Twitter, on YouTube, or any other platform, and we post it live. And then you can just join us live. And you can send in emails at aaa@podnos.com and voicemails at 707-6-PODNOS.
Now, we do watch the chat room throughout the show so that your feedback is observed. Sorry, I'm a little brain dead tonight. I'm not my usual self. So I think I'll just say good night, everybody. It's good to be back with you. Hopefully, we'll see you next week. But that's it for this episode of the Android App Addicts Podcast.
My name is Jeff Halish. I'm the host of Podnuts Daily, where we interview real people who are working in the computer repair field. I would like to invite you to check out the shows to learn what other computer repair techs are doing. If you would like to be a guest on the show, then contact me at guest@podnuts.com. Podnuts Daily, where it's fun to talk tech.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.